the Feynman diagrammatic for the spin foam models. Jacek?
Hello. My name is Jacek. I'm speaking now from Marseille. I'm from Warsaw University. I'm going to present a result of the work that I made together with Marcin Piszowski and Jerzy Lewandowski. The subject of my talk is framework that we call Feynman diagrammatic for spin foam models, because it allows to construct spin foams and spin foam amplitudes from a very basic block. The details can be found in a paper on archive, as you can see at the first slide, the number of it. So let's go to the next slide to see the outline of the talk. First, the talk is divided into three parts. In the first part, I will define the operator spin network diagrams, which are the main character of the talk, which are this framework. While defining it, I will show also some object called contractors, which are a generalization of spin foam amplitude, very useful in this case. Then in the second part, I will show some properties of the diagrams. I will show how to reconstruct usual spin foam from them. And then in the last part, I will show some examples of use it. Firstly, the trivial examples of the very basics, and then I will show how to resolve one problem, real issue of finding all spin forms that may be applicated to dipole cosmology model, or the spin forms more complicated than the ones already have been applied. So let's go to the slide number 4 to see motivation of our work. Well, what we wanted to do was to introduce such a framework in which one can do spin forms without need to imagine knotted and complicated two-cell complexes. Well, and it happened to be possible. And the other goal that we wanted to achieve was find the right class of two complexes for covariant loop quantum gravity. Class of two complexes that is not too big, not too small to do loop quantum gravity. While doing this, we also do some side quests, which were first we introduced a useful representation of vertex amplitudes as object called contractors. I will show them in a minute. And we also, as I said, found all the spin forms with one vertex, with precisely one vertex inside, and with the boundary given by Rovelli's dipole cosmology graph. So let's go to the next slide. I will define now these diagrams. Let's go one slide further to the slide preliminary to the Hilbert space. Well, firstly, to fix notions, I will say what I mean by what type of Hilbert space. First, in case of graph, I will think of link Hilbert space as a carrier Hilbert space of a representation that is attached to this link. Then, at any node, I may define a node Hilbert space as a space of invariance of representation meeting at this node, which is a subspace of this big tensor product of this link with the spaces, and then given a graph Hilbert space will be a center product of node Hilbert spaces for all nodes of the graph, which is quite well-known stuff. And then in case of two complexes, I associate a representation of a group with a phase, so I have phase Hilbert space, and then for each edge I have a Hilbert space being tensor product of a beginning of such Hilbert space and ending of such Hilbert space, to HEV1 and HEV2, and well, both of them, beginning and the ending of the edge, has a structure which is very similar to the structure of a node in a graph. So I define beginning and ending edge Hilbert spaces in analogous to node Hilbert space, and then edge Hilbert space is a tensor product of both of them, and the vertex Hilbert space will be tensor product over all edges meeting at vertex V of half of this edge Hilbert space on either beginning or end, depending on which end of edge is the vertex. So now, having this all defined, let's go to the next slide to define the contractor. And now, the contractor will be an arbitrary element of vertex Hilbert space, actually of its algebraic dual. Well, it is a simple definition, and now to make the definition more concrete, let's see where are the contractors in spinful models. Now, for example, a very simple BF contractor is a contractor which, well, I will not give a precise formula for it, but I'll give a prescription how to make it. It's a put a delta, a canonical delta at each edge of a graph or face of a complex, and contract associate indices of intertwiners with this delta. This will be BF contractor. Then more complicated Euclidean EPLR contractor will be given by a prescription. Let's take SU2 spin network, inject it into space of SO4 spin networks, and then use SO4 BF contractor for them. Well, the injection is EPLL map. There is a formula Y contracted with delta contracted with Y dagger. Well, it's not the strict formula, but it's to make intuition how this thing works. And well, in case of Lorentzian EPLL, instead of injecting into SO4 spin networks, one should inject SU2 spin network into SL2C spin networks, and then use BF contractors. So these are contractors, and let's go to the next slide to see what do we use the contractors for. Well, so now, having contractors, we will define an object called operator spinform, which will be two complex colors by representations, operators on edges, and contractors in vertices. Well, one more coloring than usual spinform models. And then, having an operator spinform, we may define its spinform operator by contracting of tensor product of contractors with tensor product of operators, and possibly multiplied by face and boundary edge amplitude. So this is an operator. Well, this is actually another way of speaking of spinform amplitude, spinform transition amplitude. in a little, in slightly different language, but all the same object. And to know what kind of object it is, well, the pinfold operator is an element of algebraic dual Hilbert space of a boundary graph. So, given a boundary graph, I may there is a natural contraction of boundary state with this operator, giving the real amplitude of a spinfold. So why was we defining it? Because the next part my talk will be about operator spin network diagrams, which allows us compute precisely this spinfold operator without the complexes. So let's go to the next slide, the graph diagram, an example. Well, here we have a picture of a graph diagram. The graph diagram, this will be topology, it will give us topology of operator spin network diagram. The graph diagram here is built on two graphs, the green ones, which are with some of their nodes are connected by dashed black lines. This will be called node relation. Well, here they are very simple graphs, and each node is free valent, but to connect to nodes, they must be of the same valency. This is the rule. And now, on the left-hand side, around this dashed line, there are dotted lines which connect links around this node, and this will be called link relation. Around the other, I haven't drawn them, but well, this is an example to show how it works. And let's go to the next slide to see the precise definition. So a graph diagram will be a family of graphs. We assume that the graphs are closed and connected. This assumption, well, to make everything gauge invariant in terms of the network. And connected, because actually, in terms of contractors, if I have two disconnected graphs, well, I may then the Hilbert space of them is just a simple tensor product. There is no need of considering disconnected graphs. So this is a set of graphs and a family of relations, as it were drawn. Node relation, which is a symmetric relation. Well, there is one restriction that any node may be related only with one other node or with no other node. There are no more than two element equivalent classes. And family of link relations, which is I will not be reading all of this out. Well, it's just saying us which link of if I have two nodes connected by a node relation. Yep, is there a question? I don't see the question, so I go on. If I have two nodes connected by a node relation, then link relation sends me which links at one node are related to links at the other node. Let's go to the next slide, one to see another more complicated example of graph diagram. It's just to see that, well, it may be something more tricky in it. And let's go one slide farther to see an example of operator spin network diagram. So what is it? Well, it's a graph diagram colored. Colored by what? Colored with links, colored by representations, nodes or pairs of nodes the pairs closed by operators P and graphs closed by contractors A1 and A2. And now let's go one slide further to see the strict definition. Well, operator spin network diagram will be a graph diagram with proper coloring, as I said. But the coloring must be consistent with the relation, which means that if two links are related, then they must share their representations, and if two nodes are related, they also must have the same operator on them. And now, one can see that here we have all the same elements as in the operator spin form defined a few minutes ago. Why am I saying it? Well, because right now the diagrammatic structure of the diagram tells us which objects should be contracted with each other to form a spin form operator, or actually diagram operator. So here we have colored diagram, and now the way objects on the diagram are connected with each other sets us how to contract the objects that are put on them to obtain an operator. And one can easily check that the operator it has the same properties as this spin form operator of a larger spin form. The only thing missing here is the face and boundary edge amplitude. And to define it, well, actually, we don't need any more information. All the information is encoded here. Let's go to the next slide. The only thing we need to do now is to extract this information. So we may extract information about edges from the nodes relation. The nodes relation was defined as a symmetric relation, but it didn't have to be equivalent relation, so if we just extend it to a minimal equivalent relation, we'll have edge relation, and each equivalent class of edge relation will be analogous of edge of spin form. And next slide, there is a definition of face relation, and face relation gather sets of links that are...
Stop, you're going too fast, so for more purpose here. So can you just go back a couple of slides, please? So,
okay.
For example, even before, operator spin network diagram, okay?
Okay.
So you're going to give a graph D, and then you've got coloring, which is row P and A. Now row labels links, which are just representations, and P labels nodes, which you explained before. What is A now?
A is the contractor that I defined even before.
The contractors were defined with either the vertices or the nodes, right?
Either vertices or graphs. Contractor sits in either vertex of a spin form, or contractor may be attached to all graphs. To all graphs, set of nodes connected.
So what is
and here? It's even written here that contractor sits in a space H gamma star, which is the tensor product over nodes that sits in this graph. That's right?
Okay. It's right. It's tensor product over all nodes sitting in that graph. Okay.
In the graph.
That's what you call A, which is A sub gamma.
Okay. Yeah, so okay. This is A sub gamma. A sub gamma. Right.
A of gamma.
That's it.
Okay. And now, you're introducing lots of definitions, but can you explain why you're doing it? I mean, motivation or where you're going, which is just a bit lost. I mean, it's not that it's impossible to understand what you're doing, but it's difficult to understand where you're going or why. What is the motivation or...
when am I going? I'm going to define a framework that allows me to build a spin form from a little blocks. Each of these blocks will be a graph with some labeling, a graph with labeling and with one contractor to it. And now, and with and having such a graph, I may glue them and I may define relations as in the graph diagram, which will tell me how to connect them and well then why am I doing it. So think of blocks that can build a spin form. Yes, I will have to decompose a spin form into very simple pieces that I can consider separately instead of considering all complicated complex. Right, and I will. Okay, is it okay?
Yeah, it's okay. So now these relations, the edge relations, and so on. So what are they doing? They're doing this, telling us abstractly which edges are connected to the same vertex. So what are they doing? Edge relations.
So the edge relation and face relation, what they are doing is they are give equivalence classes of these relations. Equivalence classes of edge relations will be edges of a spin form. Equivalence classes of face relations will be faces of spin form.
That's all. So all the edges of a spin form will correspond to just one equivalence class of edge relation.
Each equivalence class will give us one edge. Each equivalence class of face relation will give us one face. Is it okay?
Okay.
Okay. So let's go to the slide face relation, because there are two types of face of equivalence classes of face relations. I will call them, one of them will be called closed, the other one will be called open, and it depends, they can be distinguished one from another by the fact that in the closed one, the links in this equivalence class may form a cyclic series, while in the open one, the series doesn't close. To explain it, let's go to the one side further to the like example of face relation. So here there is the graph diagram that was presented before, and one equivalence class of face relation is highlighted. It is closed one, and actually any other equivalence class of face relation is open in this graph. So one can see how does it look like in a diagram, and why is this all stuff? Well, the closed equivalence classes will refer to internal faces of the spin form, which is the faces that have no boundary edges, and the open equivalence classes will refer to open. To faces that have a boundary edge in them. This is why I was defining this. Okay, so are there any questions right now? Any further questions? Because it was lots of definitions, half an hour of definitions, and well, later I will be using them, so if there is any thing that is not clear, it's good to ask right now. Well, I don't hear any questions.
Let me ask a question. Oh. So people have been doing, like, you know, the Marseille group has been drawing those two complexes and looking at face needs and so on and so forth. So you have basically formalized what was intuitively obvious as to what was closed and what was open. Is that a fair statement?
Could you repeat? So I, you mean...
People have been drawing. people have been drawing two complexes and doing spin foam models, right? I mean, so without these definitions that you just introduced, all the equivalence relations and open ones and closed ones. So I'm just trying to understand if, in fact, what you have done is formalizing the constructions that people were using before, or is there something conceptually genuinely new that was not included before?
This is formalizing of what was already done. That's right. It is formalizing and putting it into a slightly different language that is actually more convenient to us in Warsaw.
All right.
Okay. So let's go further to see how to reconstruct the spin foam. It will be quite fast. Let's go into slide from the graph diagram to complex one. First, we will reconstruct the two complexes from a graph diagram, which were, what I present is a formalization of a little bit, making things more. So, to make it too complex, firstly, we have our graph diagram. Firstly, what we do is to let's go to the slide with the picture. Is turning graph into a squid graph, so-called squid graph, by putting auxiliary nodes at each edge of it. Well, it's just a technical stuff to make. Few things more strict. We put these extra nodes, but we remember the structure of our graph by this squid. The squid is highlighted on the right hand side picture around the node N2. The squid is just a little piece of graph. And the next step, we shrink each graph, let's go to the next slide, we shrink each graph to a point, obtaining a little pieces of two complexes. That's by shrinking a graph, homotopy is a little too complex, so we shrink each graph in this way, in the way presented at this slide. And then, right now, we have a little complexes with each one having one vertex inside, each one having boundary given by the graph of one graph in the diagram. And now the graph is decomposed into squids. And now we have our relation in our diagram, the node relation. So the node relation becomes a set of pairs of squids. So let's go to the next slide to see the gluing. Now, having two squids on a picture, I have two graphs, gamma 1 and gamma 2, with squid lambda and lambda prime related by the node relation. So going to the bottom picture, from a fragment of a graph, I obtain fragment of a two complex. And to the right-hand side, I glue it in a quite intuitive way with another piece of two complex. So right now, at the third step, what we do, we glue each pair of squids, each pair of nodes belonging to the relation R node. And now go to the next slide. We introduce some auxiliary vertices and nodes and edges. So now we erase them. The letters show us we erase X vertices. We erase everything that's related to X vertices, which is ZX edges and internal NX edges. And we remove some internal N vertices. Why? Let's see at the picture. We have a fragment of two complex from the previous slide, and after removal, the vertex N1, well, it's not needed anymore, so we remove it. And now let's go to the next slide to sum up the procedure. We have two complex such that for each equivalent class of phase deletion, there is a phase. It's open if the phase have a boundary edge. The phase may have only one boundary edge in our case. Then for each equivalent class of edge deletion, we have an internal edge. And for one element boundary, one element equivalent class, there is the edge has one of its ends on a boundary, and for each graph there is one internal vertex. And having all this, we can see that the coloring of such two complex is straightforward. So to each graph diagram that we've introduced, one can construct a colored, a good colored spin form. And we claim that this, that the class of two complexes constructed in this way is the right class to do the spin form model. What is it about? Well, it has some features that can be proven. I'll not go into detail right now, maybe we'll come back to it later. But let's go to the next slide, because another feature of our model, our framework, is that it's quite easy to obtain a boundary graph from a graph diagram, the boundary graph of the spin form that we are considering. And how to do it? Well, the picture shows how to do it. We remove the nodes that are glued because they aren't on a boundary, and we join the links according to the link selection. So this is, there is one, there is an example, and let's go slide further. There is a strict algorithm how to do it, and another example. Okay, so is there any questions here?
We don't understand anything, so let's just start from scratch, okay? So let's not go back to the place where you say that you are constructing two complex from a graph, right?
Construct two complex from a graph. Okay.
Two complex. That is the whole construction. Okay. So why are we doing this? I mean, why should a graph be converted into two complex? And then usually you have got two boundary graph, and a two complex, so to say, you know, is the connects them, right? And it's a quantum four-dimensional history which connects them. The graph, you can think of it as being a quantum geometry at a given instant of time. And then, even two of them, you can connect them with a history. So here, you are just given one graph diagram. You want to construct a two complex. So what is the motivation here?
Well, give me a second. Here in our construction, the graph was encoded in a the motivation is shown in a paper of Wojtek Kaminski, Martin Kiszewski, and Jurek Krawandowski from 2009. The motivation is that the structure of each vertex is maybe encoded in a graph. Surrounding a spin form vertex by a little sphere, one obtains a graph of an intersection of the sphere and the complex. And, well, this was actually the way how we approached this, how we started doing our framework. In our operators spin network diagram, a single graph doesn't express a quantum space. It expresses a vertex of a spin form, actually. It expresses a structure of vertex of spin form, and the way the graphs are connected by the relations express the way the vertices in a spin form are connected by edges. This is our motivation. And from such and the boundary graph that I presented later, well, it's in fact a quantum space that's related. This might be thought as a spin network.
Yeah, but why are you constructing it too complex, even given your motivation? So your motivation was that you're given a vertex, then you consider a ball, and you look at the intersection, so to say, of this ball with the two complex, right?
Yeah.
And then you get this graph. And now you're trying to reconstruct that two complex, given this graph. Is that right?
That's right. We're trying to show that, in fact, having the complex, you can construct having a two complex by the construction of this little balls and so on, you can construct a graph diagram. Now the question is, does any graph diagram can be reduced to a two complex? From two complex to graphs, we can do by this little ball procedure. Now the question is, can this procedure be inverted? And the answer is yes, it can.
Okay, so that is what you are showing in this part, that the procedure can be.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so let's go to the first part of my talk, which is examples. So let's go to the a trivial example. As a very first example, we'll show how to construct a spin form which is just a cylinder over a spin network. Okay, without any interaction vertex. So let's go to the next slide. The graph diagram that will be representing such a spin form, we will be built from a theta-like graph, the theta-like graph, it will be built by as many theta-like graphs as many there are nodes in the spin network. So for each node, we construct a theta graph with the such that for any link outgoing from N, there is a link going from down to up, for lower to upper node of a theta, and for any link ingoing to N, there is a link going from upper to lower, and then we have extra nodes in the middle of each edge, obtaining the graph theta N tilde, the right hand side. Now, what is or it's not squeezing as it was in the previous section. It would be to reconstruct the graph sector. Now let's go to the next slide. We have as many thetas as we had the nodes. We define a link relation. We define a node relation between the nodes in the middle of link. Such that it reconstructs the graph and each upper and lower thread unrelated. Okay, so this is our question. The node relation is defined as I said. Upper and lower nodes of the theta boundary in and out graph, as you can see in the middle picture, and finally we end up with the spin form at the right picture, you one can see that there are horizontal edges and there are some nodes in this spin foam. There are some vertices in the spin foam. However, there are no vertical faces in it, and each vertical edge has a very trivial structure. In fact, it's to obtain a trivial spin foam, not only a trivial to compass, but a trivial spin foam, one has to color it, of course. And the right coloring is to color horizontal edges with actually all edges with identities and all vertices by BF contractions, and then we have trivial spin foam. Now let's go to the next slide to have some extension of this diagram, some non-trivial diagram. First, let's try to add one graph present interaction to our diagram, as it's shown at the picture. Well, let's go to the next slide to see what's the result. Well, the result is a spin form as presented at the pictures. Well, it has precisely one interaction vertex. It is non-trivial. Well, it's quite simple. I can draw it, but let's go to the next slide. There is another graph diagram, again with one interaction graph and lots of theta. Well, it's also simple, but it's more complicated. And if you go to the next slide, you can see the boundary graph of this spin foam very easily by just the algorithm I presented. You can calculate the amplitudes by appropriate contractions of objects. However, I don't even try to draw a too complex that is equivalent to this diagram. So, well, the power of our framework is that we can do the spin foam without imagining the too complex of such a spin foam. We can calculate transition amplitudes, but we don't have to. We have more simple picture. So that's one thing. And now let's go to the next slide to see the solution of a problem. Well, doing Dipole cosmology. The Dipole cosmology is defined by boundary dipole graph. But to do Dipole cosmology, one should consider, in general, all the spin forms that can connect this graph. The Verlis group have already considered the graph in the middle of the equation, the graph with one simple vertex. The question is, what are the others? Now, we were using operator spin network diagrams framework, we will answer this question, at least at one vertex level. So let's go to the next slide to see the tactics of our solution. Well, the tactic is, first we write theta-like graphs for the boundary. So we have four theta, four valid theta, connected in some way. Then, since boundary is fixed, only four nodes may be left unrelated. So the upper nodes of upper theta and lower nodes of lower theta. Any other nodes that appear in whole diagram must be related to something. And thus, this leads us to the first point. We must connect the related nodes of theta with some nodes in the interaction diagram in the middle, and we must find the interaction graphs that can be drawn here. And the interaction graph must have four nodes, each one being four valent, and if it has any other nodes, then these nodes must be related within it. So these are the assumptions, actually, these are the rules how we are finding it. So let's go to the next slide. First, we will consider the results that under one limitation, we assume that there are no extra nodes. There are only four nodes in the interaction graph. So let's go to the next slide to see the graph diagram that represents the very least spinform, the very least labeled spinform. This is one of the results of all. And next 10 slides give us other solutions. So there are lots of them. In fact, each solution is just one of each way the four valence nodes can give a hand to each other, give us one solution. One may even assume that one node gives hand to itself and obtain one of the two last solutions that are presented. There are some more because thanks to the fact that nodes can give hands to itself, well, give us really lots of pretty singular but well admissible results. So, but what's happening if one allow appearance of extra nodes? Well, to do it, let's go to slide 49, which is a more complicated solution. Well, then one should have to consider graphs, for example, like this one. There are lots of them, of course. This is not the only one. And some internal J's may appear, because as one can see in the solutions before, all J's in the graph diagram was fixed by the J's on the boundary. And here there might appear this J6, J5, J6, J7, as one can see, and well, one has to sum of the J's. And some divergences may appear, but may not actually, it hasn't been studied yet. Now let's go to the next slide. The solution I have just presented, well, it's not limited to the...
We don't understand where we are in the slide, so can you tell us what the title is of the slide?
General solution.
Thank you.
Okay. So, the slide general solution. This method, well, it's not limited to the dipole cosmology, of course. Given any boundary graph, I may construct all spin forms, or in other words, all operator or spin at all diagrams with the fixed boundary by the procedure, writing the theta, then writing down squids for each node of the boundary graph, and then, well, first at the first level of complexity. Just consider all the ways that the squeeze withdrawn may give a hand to each other. And then, to be more general, consider all diagrams with the constraint that if I add an node, I have to add another node that will be related to this one. So, if there are any questions here, I would suggest them to wait one more minute, because we're going now to the end of the talk. Let's go to the slide called summary. What have we done? Well, we have firstly introduced a notion of contractors being a generalization of vertex amplitude, and which allowed us to consider all the spinform models at once. We have introduced a framework that allows to encode all the information into graphs equipped with relations. Then we have proposed a class of two complexes appropriate for spinforms, the ones that might be constructed from the diagram. And we do one application of our framework, and we found all one vertex spinforms with boundary fixed to be dipole graph. And now let's go to the next slide for directions. What can we do next? Well, we can. What's being done now is we're preparing explicit definition of EPLL, Euclidean Lorentzian EPLL, in terms of operator spinful diagrams. Well, it would be strict formula for projectors and contractors and so on. I presented only heuristics in this area here. Then one should characterize the two complexes that do not belong to the class we have proposed. And then one should ask what the cylindrical equivalence give us at the level of operator spin network diagrams. Because, of course, we know that some operations on a boundary graph shouldn't change the theory. So, how does it affect operator spin network diagrams? One may try to relate it with group field theory, and one can do something concrete with the spinform we have constructed for the dipole cosmology. One can calculate amplitudes, and one can ask for divergences. Do they appear? What do they mean? In case of this internal trace, in case of dipole cosmology, which is quite simple example to ask complicated question. So let's go to the last slide. Well, I thank you for your attention and ask for some questions.
So for the dipole cosmology, is there a final result which improves on what was done before?
Well, we haven't calculated the amplitudes, so we don't know how does it affect. But we have one step to do it. We have spinforms that so we know what amplitudes one should compute. This is the result from last 2 weeks. So
But do you have some expectations that is it going to be the same, or is it likely to be different, or you just don't know?
I don't know. I don't know.
So I have a question regarding these classifications of diagram, like for instance for the cosmology one. Can you go back to the spinform description? For instance, can you characterize how many bubbles there will be in the diagram?
Well, what can I characterize is how many close edges.
For your prescription, can you tell me how many bubbles there will be in the spinform?
Well, I'm not sure how many bubbles, but I know how many closed edges. Closed circles of edges, because each pair of nodes in this, for example, let's go to this slide, more complicated solution. Here there are two nodes in the interaction graph that are related with them. So each pair of nodes gives me one closed edge that starts and ends at the same vertex. And, well, this is the way how should I look for bubbles. Hello?
Unclosed what?
Closed edge. I mean, an edge that starts and
ends. Can you see how many bubbles there is there in this diagram?
I think it is possible, but I don't know yet the formula. I think it should be possible.
That would mean that then you understand the spin foam geometry. Because really, the you know, most of the divergence and the analysis and the normalization, they take place in bubbles. So if there was a way to locate bubbles in this, you know, in these diagrams, that would be very useful.
I guess it is. I just haven't think about it yet. But I think it should be possible.
Okay.
Is your viewpoint that perhaps one does not have to do the standard things and go through the bubbles and so on, and that you can actually evaluate the diagram, the what would be the normally evaluate from the spin foam diagrams, would just reduce the evaluation of certain graphs, and that is easy. Is that the point of view, or are you just translating everything back to spin foams again?
Oh, our point of view is to translate it to graphs, and evaluation of each graph is easy. So, and that's our motivation. So, we think that consideration of divergence will be easier.
So, I think that for people doing spin forms, this to be convinced. I mean, you should do something which is kind of non-trivial to do in spin forms, for example, having the bubbles and so on, and you can just do it in terms of your evaluating a graph and show what the answer is. And then maybe, I mean, I agree with you that you don't have to translate back to spin forms, but then we need to know what the result is, right? We need to know how much control you have. Are there divergences in the way that you are doing things? Can you classify those divergences and so on? That's what one would like to know. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, no, we don't. Thank you for this session.
This is Frank Hellman from Berlin. I would like to comment on this relationship to the spin forms. I think really it's a very powerful way of looking at the spin forms. The equivalence is right there. And I mean this is a beautiful generalization of it, of what was a calculational tool to me in my thesis. So now it's turned from a calculational tool useful only for 3D Pontano-Redi to something very general, and a way to define two complexes and define kind of what classes of two complexes we're interested in. And that's a hard question. I mean, just for the dipole cosmology, for example, just to give some context of where this kind of tool is very useful. For the dipole cosmology, it took us a lot of time and brain power to figure out, in terms of two complexes, what kind of amplitudes we're dealing with at the one vertex level. And Benjamin Barr first pointed out that there were weird ones. Then when I tried to prove that they are not too weird, I actually found out this infinite class of infinitely weird ones. And here, you just write down the graph. It's very easy. And you see immediately that they're all there. So conversely, this should also give us an idea of how to restrict the model to kind of tame it, to make this better behave. And this directly affects the divergences, because these weird graphs turn out to be very, very divergent and give huge divergent contributions. So I think this is, as a calculational tool and as an approach towards taming and defining kind of what the appropriate physical restrictions are, extremely powerful, extremely useful, and I think it's really great work.
Yeah, so that solution is exactly what you're saying, namely, in the graphs themselves, diagrammatic, find techniques which isolate divergences, maybe renormalize, et cetera, right? And if one doesn't do
exactly
that, then yeah.
And then it becomes a lot easier at the graph level. I mean, it's not trivial. I mean, everything we've done for amplitude, for spin foams has been by taking it to spin networks and evaluating spin networks. I mean that's always where the calculations have happened. And now also we can look at the topological information in terms of graphs. And I mean I think this is a great like taking off point. Exactly.
Yeah, maybe, but then you should be able to tell me how many bubbles there is, how many sources of divergence there is. You should be able to tell me what is the point of the corresponding interpolating manifold. which are two key things that, you know, are very important for, let's say, the normalization, the larger limit, and all this understanding of spin foam. So, as Abhay was saying, you know, it looks very promising, but it needs to be, you know, extended so that these questions that we know how to answer within the spin foam picture are also easily answered there.
One comment is that we don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm not kind of 100% on the cutting edge. What we can do there, but what the point when in terms of triangulations, we can do a lot, of course, on the kind of too complex spin foam side. But if you want to look at more general sort of decompositions, I'm not aware that we actually can do that yet, can we? Because then if I look at general, that's what I was saying before, when we were looking at kind of dipole cosmology in terms of two complexes, in terms of the way we usually looked at this, it's all been actually quite complicated. I'm not aware that we're actually able to answer these questions you're asking in the non-simplicial context.
Maybe, but as I said, you know, you should be able to tell me what's the number of bubbles or divergence and what's the topology. So maybe it is more powerful. It has to be, you know, included.
Agreed.
So this is the point that if I were modest and just wanted to look at the simplicity common, not consider more general. More general spin forms. Then, in fact, this level of generalization doesn't really add very much. Or I'm just not understanding where the role of this will be. Would it be mainly in order to go beyond simplicities, or even in the case of simplicial complexes, we learn a lot of new things?
That would be my view. And in terms of simplicial complexes, you're not really learning. In terms of, I don't think you would learn much. Maybe the people in Warsaw have different opinion on this, but in my view, on the simplicial side, it's sometimes convenient calculational tool, but it doesn't really teach you very much new.
Can I have a question also? So as far as I understand, you give a series of graphs for contributes, let's say, to the dipole cosmology. So these graphs are more and more complicated, but in what sense they are more complicated? So how do you see that a graph is, I don't know, further down the road than another one? It has more vertices, it has more lines. How do you see that? Well, what does it mean that a graph is more complicated than another one?
For example, you can order it by number of nodes. Yes, because each node, each pair of nodes, in a graph diagram gives you an edge. So by ordering the graph by number of nodes, you see how many, there is one way of looking at the level of complication. The other one is number of days, and well, the one I presented at the picture have three days that are fixed by the external by the boundary graph, and three J's that are not fixed by the external graph. So this is another way of looking at it. It's like, and just you have to sum over each of these J's. So it's like number of free momenta in loop Feynman diagram, right? So something like this. Does that answer your question?
I would like to answer that question too. So this is Jurek Lewandowski from Warsaw. So I would say simply that those graphs which Jacek presented for dipole cosmology are sort of one vertex spin forms which has this desired boundary. And other spin forms would be two vertex spin forms, three vertex spin forms, which in terms of our graph, the number of vertices inside is the number of connected graphs of this graph diagram, which we glue to the boundary.
Yes, sir. Anyway, from the point of view of spinform, you always have only one vertex in the middle. And the, yes. the drawing inside this vertex, these green things, represent more and more complicated drawings inside the one vertex of the spinform, no? Is this correct?
Yes.
Yes, it is correct.
Okay, so then looking at this green drawing, if I have a graph with many, many vertices, but which has a very simple structure, let's say it's just a sequence of these theta graphs, you know, one on top of each other. So that would be considered like a very complicated graph, a very high order graph, just because it has many vertices, or it should be a simple one just because it has no bubbles, no nothing, it's just a straight line of theta graphs.
Actually, it would be simple because theta is something like a free propagator, free timeline propagator, straight line in a timeline diagram. This is
so this would be the many, many thetas, one after the other. I would say that this, if this is a simple graph, then the number of vertices is certainly not a good way to index which are the more complicated green drawings inside. Because I have an example of a guy who has many, many vertices, green vertices, but it's actually simple, you say.
I think there are a few ways of ordering. One way is the number of vertices, but then each vertex may be more or less complicated, and when you consider one vertex, you see that the theta is the simplest one. The more nodes is in a one green drawing, the more edges meet, and then that's how it works, right? These are the ways of looking for level of complexity of a diagram, right? Does it answer?
Could I ask something? I think it was Frank who said that this was useful for going beyond simplicial complexes. What do people have in mind when they think beyond simplicial complexes?
Well, the complex, two complexes we have considered are not simplicial, right? So they are not built on simplexes. They are just that. There are maybe not arbitrary two complexes, but well, they may have arbitrary balance. They may have arbitrary number of faces glued in quite funny ways, and this is.
Maybe I should say what I was referring to before were two complexes due to a simplicial decomposition of the manifold. So that's a very specific class of two complexes. For example, the neighborhood of every vertex looks the same in that case. So here, it's going for two complexes that are not dual to the triangulation of a manifold. And that are, at the same time, not as general as the class of all topological two complexes, which is a huge class. That's very hard to handle.
Okay, thanks.
Just a general remark. I mean, you know, if we went to this conference in Zurich, for example, where there were many quantum field theory people. I think Laurent was there the following week and so on. And their main concern seemed to be that, okay, use simplicial complexes, fine, you know, and then we just go into the dual two complexes which are determined by the simplicial decomposition. But their main worry was really about going adding more and more vertices. And their point was that, well, because they come from, you know, standard quantum field theory, where you can try to define a theory on some lattice or something and then take the appropriate limit, and continuum, what is normally for them a continuum limit, would be like allowing arbitrary number of vertices. And their worry was that then the number of terms just blows, you know, faster than exponential, and how will you ever control anything, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we don't have any answers to those questions at all. And rather, we seem to be going in a direction in which we want to sort of keep the number of vertices very small, but consider more and more complicated, complex quantum geometries. Is that a fair summary of what is happening here, for example?
No, I don't. This is Jurek again. I don't think this is our main goal to make the number of, to fix the number of vertices and make spin films more complicated. I think we are going in both directions. We just want to understand what are spin films, which we consider, and we are open to consider all number of vertices. So I understand that you would like to go to some other limit to increase the number of vertices. So certainly by using those graphs, we can, with no problem, we can consider such questions too.
But will that be easier to handle in terms of this graph? This is coming back to the question. Jurek, I was asking a question to Frank before, and Frank seemed to think that if it is really simplicial, you know, standard, two complexes which come from a simplicial decomposition, then one would not really necessarily simplify anything doing this way. Would you disagree with that?
I think that what Frank meant was whether we can contribute to the theory of simplicial decompositions or to some, I don't know, topology. So he thinks that there is not much we can contribute. Perhaps he's right, but and this was also not our goal. Our goal is just to somehow control a general spin form.
Supposing I just consider a spin form which was coming from simplicial complexes, and if I just want an arbitrary large number of vertices, then do you think that this, looking at it in terms of this graph, is going to simplify the calculation or give a more control on what the divergences are and so on?
Well, at least it will be quite useful to use the diagram. I don't know if it simplifies an analytical part.
Just a comment. If we look at a simplicial case, then all the graphs that show up there are the four simplex graph, the gamma 5, the complete graph on five vertices. So in that case, the information is all in the gluing of these in the edge relations and the vertex relations that were written down. So that is how a simplicial complex would look in this language, and you can see that it still is a very nice way of writing down how the triangulation looks. I don't know if it would help with the calculation very much in that case. I wanted to comment on this on your point that we need to look at large number of vertices. I agree completely, and but the thing to see is like this is in the context in which to see this is Carlos, maybe, or one of the contexts where this is useful is Carlos' proposal that really we do this by looking at kind of a projective limit of two complexes. In that context, we kind of need more general complexes. Also, the calculations in the spin film cosmology, none of them is done with a simplicial decomposition. None of them are done with synthesis. They're all done with a few vertices in the spin film, but they're all done in a more general context than a simplex context, because this more general context allows you to look at some stuff that's more simple than you could otherwise do. So in this sense, I think it's technically interesting, and it certainly doesn't alleviate the problem that you were talking about. But it's very much kind of us, I think, trying to grasp kind of what the right context is in which to grapple these hard questions of the large and like many vertices, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you.
I just have a technical question here. Like when I start to add this internal diagram, which have three spins floating around, then usually when I think about one vertex, it should have the topology of a ball, three balls. So do you know what is the topology of this kind of vertex when you have internal edges? I would guess it's not a topology of a ball, right? That's essentially what we call vertex is something which has a simple topology. So if I take a boundary graph of something which is, which has the topology of a three ball, of a four ball, then there's certainly a restriction on what is the dual diagram in your language. Is there?
Oh.
Well, this might have more complicated topology, I agree. So this graph with self-gluings may give more complicated topology. That's fine.
Okay, but then maybe I will not really call it one vertex. This goes back to what Abai was saying, that is, if I start to have one vertex which is not the triangle, then in some sense it's made out of different elements, right? And topologically simpler different elements. And I think there should be, what you're doing is like repackaging in one vertex what is usually done in many vertices. So, I don't know, there needs to be some understanding there on the topology of this.
If you have a graph with self-gluings, which is vertex with edge starting at it and ending at it, you might also try to think about it like two vertices with when one of them is very simple, right? So this one of them being theta. That's how you can imagine it, and then you have more vertices. That's why I call it a more complicated solution.
Okay. More questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.